I don't want to be in a position to lose 5-10% of my workforce overnight on a vaccine mandate.
U.S. workplace vaccine mandates rising. It's Tuesday, October 12th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Casquiel in Washington. Visit us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Evergrande ripple effects warning, calls for more mental health spending, entrepreneurs thrive despite pandemic. It's all on today's VOA Asia. As the U.S. national rate of COVID-19 infections declines, vaccine mandates for some jobs are pushing some employees to get the shots, while others protest. Michelle Quinn reports.
It's a moment that's long been coming in the United States, with 76% of people in the country having had at least one vaccination. Deadlines are approaching fast in workplaces, requiring employees to get the shot against COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, or risk losing their jobs. That has resulted in some pushback from employees. In Los Angeles, the sheriff said he will not enforce the county's vaccine mandate when it comes to his 18,000 employees.
There are entire groups of employees that are willing to be fired and laid off rather than get vaccinated. So I don't want to be in a position to lose 5-10% of my workforce overnight on a vaccine mandate.
These tensions come as the U.S. daily rate of COVID-19 infections has declined to about 95,000 new cases. That's a drop from a high during the most recent peak in September of 172,000 a day, according to the Johns Hopkins University, which is tracking the global outbreak. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, told CNN's State of the Union program he is optimistic about the pandemic's trajectory, but it's too soon to roll back pandemic restrictions such as masking.
I'd like to see it well below 10,000 and even much lower than that. But when you're at 95,000, that's still a situation where you have a high degree of dynamic circulation of virus in the community.
Health officials are expected to meet later this month to discuss Pfizer's application for emergency approval for children aged 5 to 11 to get its vaccine. Pfizer has proposed giving children one-third of the adult dosage. Former Food and Drug Administration head Scott Gottlieb, who sits on Pfizer's board, told CBS's Face the Nation that vaccine mandates for school children will likely be years off.
12 to 17 could be a couple of years away, perhaps a little longer. I think 5 to 11 is even longer than that. You're going to want to get more experience in those children.
Meanwhile, the Biden administration has pledged $1 billion to purchase millions of at-home rapid COVID-19 tests amid reports of test kit shortages around the country. By December, the White House says it will have a supply of 200 million kits per month. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
You are invited to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Analysts say thaw in Sino-U.S. trade dispute would lift world supply chains and dent Southeast Asia. New Zealand left us out to dry in pandemic, Maori leader says. Key UN Biodiversity Summit opens in China. 106-day COVID-19 lockdown ends in Australia's biggest city. Facebook-backed group launches misinformation adjudication panel in Australia. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia on this Tuesday. Australia's Reserve Bank, the country's central bank, has warned that the collapse of Chinese property giant Evergrande Group could cause chaos in China's financial system. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In its semi-annual financial stability review, the Reserve Bank of Australia acknowledged that Evergrande Group, the heavily indebted Chinese real estate developer, faced a liquidity crisis or a lack of cash or assets that can be converted easily to cash. The Reserve Bank warned that if Evergrande, China's second biggest property developer, collapses, it could trigger broader problems in China's financial and real estate sectors. Evergrande is facing one of China's largest ever defaults, with billions of dollars in debt. Its business interests are vast, from wealth management and the manufacture of electric cars to the ownership of one of the country's biggest soccer teams, Guangzhou FC. Chinese authorities last year started to restrict the debts of big real estate companies. Win Chung is the managing editor in the School of Regulation and Global Governance at the Australian National University.
The Chinese government does realize that real estate sector is important to the economy. And on top of that, it is important for the social stability of China. Because in China, a lot of people's savings, assets are tied up in real estate, more so than in many other countries.
China is Australia's biggest trading partner, and experts warn of serious implications for Australia should Evergrande default on its massive loans. The crisis has already hit the price of Australia's main export, iron ore, a key ingredient in steel making. Analysts warn that China could cut steel production, which would further depress iron ore prices. Commodities have underpinned Australia's recent prosperity. Analysts have also warned that Australia's stock market and skittish investors would easily be unsettled if Evergrande went bust. However, financial observers hope the Chinese government, which governs the world's second largest economy, will try to restructure Evergrande's debt to prevent its collapse. They've stressed that China's ability to contain a financial meltdown is about to be severely tested, and its success or failure would have global implications. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still to come on VOA Asia: why the World Health Organization says governments need to do more for mental health. Happening now in Asia, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un urged officials to focus on improving citizens' lives in the face of a grim economic situation, state media reported Monday, as he marked the anniversary of the country's ruling party. State media didn't mention any specific comments toward Washington and Seoul. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. The World Health Organization is calling on governments to allocate the money needed to increase access to mental health treatment. WHO has published a new mental health atlas marking World Mental Health Day this past Sunday. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Data collected from 171 countries show none of the World Health Assembly targets for the provision of mental health care by 2020 has been achieved. Therefore, WHO says it is extending its comprehensive mental health action plan to 2030. Fami Hanna is a technical officer in WHO's Department of Mental Health and Substance Use. He says lack of money is a major reason these goals have been missed. He says governments allocate just 2.1% of their overall health budgets to mental health services.
And in majority of the countries, most of this budget goes to psychiatric hospitals, long-stay inpatient facilities, instead of being spent on community-based mental health services, which are more human rights-oriented and less decentralized and more accessible to the population.
The WHO reports more than a billion people globally suffer from mental health illness. The most common such illnesses include anxiety disorders, depression, bipolar and eating disorders, as well as psychotic disorders, including schizophrenia. The data in the atlas was collected in 2019 and reflects the status of pre-pandemic mental health services. However, health officials agree COVID-19 is having a major impact on people's mental health, and more investments must be made in treating them. Hannah says WHO has carried out two surveys during the pandemic. He says the findings show major disruptions in services offered to people suffering from neurological illnesses and substance abuse.
At a time where there was calls for scaling up mental health services around the world, we found from data of the rapid survey that was conducted in 2021 that actually 23% of countries have reported scaling back their community-based mental health services.
Besides the human costs, WHO says skimping on investing in mental health makes no economic sense. It says lost productivity from depression and anxiety alone, two of the most common mental health disorders, cost the global economy $1 trillion each year. However, it notes there is a return of $5 for every dollar invested in treating these conditions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Finally, on VOA Asia, in India, as in other countries, the COVID-19 pandemic had a devastating effect on many restaurants, forcing hundreds to shut down. But some entrepreneurs were not disheartened and launched new food businesses during the pandemic. Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi.
This chocolate factory opened in a cafe in November in New Delhi at a time when many restaurants had shut thanks to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. But former banker Sheetal Saxena went ahead with her passion project of showcasing the process of making chocolate. The city's first such venture drew in many diners.
They want to see what's happening upstairs. They want to know about chocolates. They're interested in the tours. A lot of people are interested in chocolate making workshops. So the inquisitive level is very, very high.
As food became a solace for many during the pandemic, offbeat ideas attracted business. During India's devastating second wave, Sunili Bhatia began making vegetarian dishes cooked without the Indian staples of onions, garlic, or heavy spices. The freelance corporate trainer found a huge demand for the Sattvic diet advocated by India's ancient Ayurveda medicine system.
I was getting up at 4 in the morning and, you know, I was sending more than 50 plates, 60 plates a day, and that included breakfast, lunch and dinner. And my utensils were small. I could not make so much food in that. So I had to online, you know, order for huge cookers.
With a renewed focus on health, Sattvika is now a successful home-based venture. Shivan Gupta saw an opportunity in the long travel restrictions. He opened a virtual French patisserie to tap into a market of affluent Indians.
I thought, what better time than the pandemic? Because while we were all locked up, and you know, we had pretty much a global lockdown. You know, you're limited to your city, and this is usually a time you travel. So, what could be a more better time than to savor the flavor that, you know, you were getting sitting in the comfort of your home?
Even as restaurants were retrenching staff, such businesses opened avenues for some, like Maxime Monte, who left his job in India with a French company to partner with Gupta. For him, the patisserie, named after his grandmother, is a chance to do the work his family did in France.
Good thing to refocus on my roots, for instance, where I come from, my family background, which is bakery and pastry.
Saxena's chocolate factory is run by an all-women team.
That was also my ode to the women entrepreneurship and contributing a bit in women equality.
The food ventures also brought comfort to a city where tens of thousands fell sick this summer.
And in fact, what was really nice was that, you know, we saw a lot of the orders being people who were gifting people who were recovering and, you know, like bringing back their taste buds.
In this pandemic-scarred industry, some managed to turn the worst of times into better times. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. Thank you for listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Chris Cascio in Washington. Enjoy your day. Until tomorrow, goodbye for now.